Could it be forever? And it seems like it is, because he's back. The man who once had a fan club bigger than Elvis Presley and the Beatles. And a warm welcome to David Cassidy. How are you doing?
I'm great. It's great to be here again on this beautiful evening. I'm so happy to be back in this country. I have to tell you that I've been blessed to... You know, I came back in November with a new CD and did five dates, five concerts, and I just was really unprepared for how overwhelming the response would be. And, you know, the CD's just gone, the new one's just gone platinum, and I have a single that's just been released, but the fans have been amazing. Just when you don't come back, as I haven't, I've worked exclusively in America the last, you know, 15 years. I've done 2,500 theatrical performances, either on Broadway or in theater in Las Vegas or concerts. You know, it's a long time to expect fans to be, you know, not only remember, but to care.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I mean it could very easily have gone the other way.
Good.
You know, he's here, he's back, so who cares?
Look at this, I've got a really old album.
Oh, yeah, The Higher They Climb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's an interesting album because it was first album for RCA that I'd made after all the years and being on Bell, which became Arista. And I co-produced the album with Bruce Johnston, who was in the Beach Boys at the time, and he wrote a song called I Write the Songs. And in fact, it was a top five record for me here in many countries. And the company in America decided that it would not be a hit. And Barry Manilow covered the song, and it was number one for, you know, it was his biggest hit ever.
Yeah.
And record companies, they're always...
What do they know?
Huh? Well, no, they know lots. Of course they do. He's genius.
So let's,
genius.
Let's just go back. So when you were at school...
school.
It was not your great years, was it, from what I've
read? The school years? Yeah. Actually, it was great years for me, because I'll tell you, honestly, after I moved to California, I was... My father lived in California. He moved there. My mom and dad were split up when I was really young. And the 60s in L.A., I got to see some of the great artists. I was kind of a wild, kind of a rebel. And I went and saw, I saw Hendrix five times. I saw Clapton and The Cream and B.B. King and Marvin Gaye and Otis Redding. And I got to see some of the great musicians. Because it was a fantastic time to be alive and to be a teenager and to be, you know, when we were in the midst of the social and sexual revolution of the 60s. It was a great time creatively, musically for me, but...
But you were a very good boy in the Partridge Family.
Well, me as an actor portraying a character who was a very sweet, and they took that imagery of me, and it wasn't that I was a bad guy. I was never that, but I was kind of a wild guy, very different from, I think, the innocent that, and it was, in certainly in America, it was the last gasp of innocence, I think. Television shows like that just were no longer, that was it. And it kind of epitomized, I think, a period of time and a culture and an innocence and a freewheeling spirit that still, from the 60s, late 60s, I think a lot of it carried over, and the style and the music, I think, you know, it just was so massively successful. And I was fortunate to be at the right place at the right time. And, you know, I played.
But how did it affect you, though? I mean, it's obviously, you know, kind of hard to
Well, that's
deal
the
with
time that,
that
you're probably thinking of, not although I might have looked like I was just in school or out of school. After, it was very difficult for me because I became so successful and so famous and so the kind of fame I had.
At what age was this?
From the time I was 19 to the time I was 25, I toured around the world and, you know, I had to be thrown in the back of limousines, in the back of trunks of cars while the limousines were decoys. And, you know, the teenage experience at that time, because there wasn't video and there wasn't VH1 and MTV, and the only shows that we didn't have we didn't have VCR, so we couldn't, you didn't have access to people like you do now, to stars. And the audience was much less sophisticated, I think. So, yeah, by the mid-70s, I was just burnt out.
I mean, the whole world loved you, though. You must have been a nightmare to deal with.
Not at all.
It honestly, must have gone to your head, surely.
No, it didn't, honestly. I mean, easy for me to say I wasn't a nightmare. But no, I mean, the people that were around me then and the people that work around me now would tell you that I've always approached it really very realistically. I think realistically that I was blessed to be given an opportunity to do the kind of work I do, because I don't do that many things well, you know. I didn't have a terrific education, so I was fortunate enough to go out and I worked with, my education was really in music and theater, and that was it. And if I hadn't made it, like most people don't, God knows what I would have been doing. I don't think I would have been very successful in life.
But it did become all too much, didn't it?
Yeah,
you just had to walk away from it.
Yeah, it did.
Was that a hard decision, or was
it? No, it was very easy. In fact, I got into a point where I was working all day on a television series, you know, doing The Partridge Family, and every night I was in the recording studio, recording as two artists, both for the television show and The Partridge Family, and also all my solo stuff. And every weekend I'd fly out and do concerts. And then on hiatus, when we weren't filming, I'd be touring all over the world. And, you know, when most people, at least in America at that age, between 19 and 24, you're out drinking beer and getting laid and doing all the stuff that, you know, rah-rah stuff that lads do. Instead, I was in this vacuum where I was working 18 hours a day, 7 days a week, and had no vices, I had very few friends, and lived in a vacuum, really.
I mean, do you resent the people around you, the managers, the agents, the people like that? I mean, you were really exploited, were you not?
Yeah, I certainly was. No, I don't think I mean, there were some people, I think, that were not good human beings and were greedy and didn't have my best interests at heart. So, I mean, those are the people that I'm pleased that their demise has come about. But I didn't have anything to do with it, incidentally. You know, people that... You can see their character pretty much, and I think in all walks of life, if you see people doing the wrong thing, they're usually going to do the wrong thing over and over and over again. It's like liars, they're always going to lie.
Karma eventually catches up.
I think it does. You know, for me, I feel probably now more than ever, I've been happier in my life, both personally and professionally, and doing the work I'm doing and having the kind of successful decade that I've had in America. It's just... You know, it's 30 years now, and it's been really so fantastic for me to be able to share it with my fans again, to come back here and, you know, have the kind of success.
Because you did stage shows, didn't you?
I've done a lot of theater. I worked in the West End, and I worked a lot on Broadway. Yeah, I've done 4 Broadway shows. I began in the theater. My parents were both in the theater. So I decided when I ended it and I walked away from all that madness in the 70s. I went back and I didn't work for 2.5 years. I didn't want to do a thing, but I decided I'd just go back and not try and compete with my fame, but to try and let the work speak for itself.
Have a sip of your tea.
Thank you.
Because, you know, I want to nick the teacup and sell it off.
Oh, yes, of course you do. Yeah, right.
But no, you did these big spectaculars in Las Vegas, which presumably, you know, that's a pretty good living, though, very successful.
Oh, it's
shows.
A very good living.
Yeah.
A poor boy like me, I mean, I'm a fortunate guy to be able to do what I've been able to do in terms of the opportunity.
So what about stepping back and doing tours like you're
touring,
doing
any concerts?
Yeah,
yeah, it's my first one in 10 years in America, and the first CD I've made in a number of years. So it was time. I mean, the audience was there, and I, you know, played to 4.5 million people in Las Vegas and on Broadway. And because I've been able to recreate and do it as an actor and do it, and, you know, now as a producer and a writer, I think that I missed it. You know, I really, the fans have been wanting me to do it, and I, you know, have been
And why do you think they're so loyal? Do they still love you now, or do you sort of take them back to that?
It's my looks and talent, of course.
Well, of course.
The gifts that I have. It goes without saying, doesn't it?
But I hear the middle-aged women are still screaming.
Well...
You know, they're kind of just reliving that wonderful, innocent period.
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of... there are a lot that are not middle-aged. There are quite a lot of young ones as well. Particularly in America, because I've been doing so much work and cultivating it. I mean, certainly the bulk of the audience is between 35 and 45, 50, I guess. But I just turned 52, and I don't consider myself middle-aged. So, I mean, you're a young lad yourself. You don't consider yourself middle-aged, do you?
No, I'm past that.
Yeah.
So listen, you must have had some difficult times.
Oh, I had a lot of them. Yeah. No question, personal. But
How did you get through those?
Character, I think it's who you are and what you're made of. I had a lot of, as a young boy, I had a lot of very good influence around me through my grandparents, who, from the time I was 3 and a half, I moved from Manhattan when my parents split up. And, you know, they took me into their home and loved me and cared for me and gave me a lot of parental support I didn't have from either my mom or dad, because my mom was working a lot. And, yeah, I was in the choir and church and school and night.
But in research notes that, you know, when we...
Yes.
It says for you, analysis was the turning point. Kind of.
Yeah, I think ultimately how I turned my life around, you have to have... It has to come from somewhere, innately. I think it has to be inside you, you know, to want to be happy. And, you know, I hate to use the old cliche, come on, get happy, but for me, yes, I did go into. I decided when I woke up one morning, I just said, you know, I don't want to feel like this anymore. I want to be. It's like,
How were you feeling? Just depressed?
Empty, yeah. Lost, without, you know, when you sometimes find yourself in all of us in our own way, in our own situations, because mine, just because I'm a famous guy, people know a lot about it, and I've tried to be as open as I can about it. I wasn't a drug addict or an alcoholic, but when you try it, when reality becomes difficult to face and reality becomes painful, you try and numb it. And, you know, to some of us to greater degrees than others, certainly. I don't have an abusive or a self-destructive nature, but I'm a pretty wild. I've always been a pretty wild fella, and I think that at a time when I was really, I'd lost my dad, and I'd lost my manager, and I was, had just come out of a pretty difficult divorce. I was very unhappy, and at that point, I just said, you know, there has to be a better way for me, and I've been given great gifts in my life, and I want to be able to appreciate them, and I think analysis was very, very helpful, and I still am in it. I'm in it all the time. I was in it 3 times a week, and it became my job. You know, okay, well, here's your choice. Either spend the rest of your life as a miserable sod, or wake up in the morning and feel good about yourself as you should. Why shouldn't you?
It's an irony, though, isn't it, that millions of people loved you, but you didn't really love yourself.
Well, I think that yes, it is an irony. You're absolutely right. I mean, the greatest example of that probably is Marilyn Monroe, who was, you know, she couldn't get a date on a Saturday night, and I think was miserable because of that. There's a certain emptiness and loneliness in extreme fame.
Everything's great now.
No, things are... I wouldn't say everything, but just about everything.
Well, what's wrong?
Life is...
You know,
I'm not getting enough tea, damn it. I love this country for that. It's given me so many things, like...
So you got a 10-year-old son, Bo?
11. He just turned 11, yeah. Bo is... He's my pride and joy and the light of my life. And he came over and saw the shows I just did last weekend at Hammersmith when I had my birthday. And My wife and he flew over, and we've had a great time. I'm going up to Manchester tomorrow night and Saturday night, and we're doing 9 or 10 dates this time. I'm playing Glasgow and Edinburgh and a couple of places I didn't have a chance to go last time when I was here, because I only did 5 dates. But, yeah, it's great to be back here.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, nice of you to come.
Oh, back. Wonderful to be here.
Enjoy the rest of the tour.
Indeed, I will, and enjoy the ride home.
Thanks, David. New single from David Cassidy, No Bridge I Wouldn't Cross. He's playing in Manchester tomorrow night and Saturday. And then he's at Sheffield on the 21st. I guess everyone's pretty much sold out anyway. Thursday next week, Nottingham. Saturday 27th, Glasgow. Sunday 28th, the Playhouse in Edinburgh.